Okay, so this call will be recorded. It will be posted on my website probably sometime today after the call, if not tomorrow. Okay. So good morning. What I want to talk about today is obviously non-dual Kabbalistic healing. My name is Brenda Blessings. Non-dual Kabbalistic healing fundamentally begins with a deep acceptance and compassion for the human being and the struggles of being a human being. We teach a practical, a fundamentally very practical and comprehensive modality for physical, emotional, and spiritual transformation and healing. What I'm going to do is talk a little bit, lead you through an exercise, then I'm going to open it up to Q&A, and then I'll talk some more and open it up again. So, despite the fact that we often feel alienated from our own lives, that we feel split and cut off, sometimes from our own feelings, our own heart, and from other people, human beings have always had a sense of the unity or oneness of reality. Kabbalistic healing explores the fundamental nature of the unitive or non-dual state of consciousness, which is the integration of the healthy human being in relationship with the impersonal or transcendent nature of reality. We could say that being in reality, or the awakened state, which are all names for being with God, is non-dual. Non-dual is the idea that things appear distinct and separate, while at the same time they are not separate. Or reality is so whole that it contains duality within its oneness. Even though it appears there's an end to being with God, or that there's a place where there is God or wholeness or oneness and a place where there's not, it's not true. We are not and cannot be separate from all that is. This is a profound truth that we have a great deal of difficulty living in our daily lives. The appearance of our lives seem to deny this fundamental truth. Often, wholeness or oneness or God has become something external to us, not something we can fully relate to, and something that is separate from our human life and the daily struggles we have of being a human being. We expend a great deal of effort trying to protect ourselves in our separateness, watching out for anything that can hurt us, usually in the form of other human beings, nature, the world itself. So we live our lives mistrusting ourselves and mistrusting reality as a whole. At the same time, we've become a society of seekers, seekers of happiness, seekers of joy, seekers of pleasure, constantly questing to get some place from where we are now to get to another place where we believe God or wholeness or oneness can be found. We have experiences of wholeness or oneness, or we have experiences that feel like a high of great connection, and we want that in the rest of our lives. However, this continual questing often becomes the problem it's trying to resolve. We end up creating additional suffering for ourselves by reinforcing the illusion that somehow the life we are living right now is separate or different from how life should be or would look like. True change begins with a relationship with what is actually present in our lives right now. As children, we couldn't bear the difficulties and sorrows of our early life. As adults, we need to know we can develop a different relationship to our life, with others around us, which includes our suffering and our imperfection. It's not that we don't need to work on ourselves, we do. It also doesn't mean that things will remain the same, that the struggles of our lives will continue to be and look exactly the way they are right now. But it does mean that instead of trying to purify ourselves, or get rid of or eliminate all of our difficult parts and all of our struggles, we want to learn to seek healing by learning how to be in profound and kind relationship with ourselves. In this way, change is given a proper home within us. In this way, we can find healing in all of ourselves. We may never completely understand the full extent of God's love and how it manifests in unexpected ways, sometimes within difficult circumstances or impossible situations. Often it isn't even the big challenges of life, such as loss of a loved one or serious illness, that causes us the greatest struggle or pain in our lives. It's often the little ones, the voices that each day tell us we're not good enough, or the voices that say, do this, don't do that, the voices of criticism that constantly tell us that who we are and how we are isn't enough. They tell us we should be wiser or kinder or smarter or something that we don't feel in the moment. It's hard to have an attitude towards ourselves of loving kindness, one that gives us a chance, one that recognizes we're doing our best at each moment. We often think if we give ourselves kindness, or we're accepting towards ourselves, that we're giving ourselves license to just do whatever we want, to be mean or greedy or selfish, or to act out our pain upon the world. We think we have to be on ourselves at every moment to improve, to constantly improve, or then we'll just be lazy. Or we won't do what we need to do or want to do. And sometimes we don't do what we need or want to do. But it isn't because we've given ourselves full license to do it. It's usually as a reaction to all of the days or moments when we're so hard on ourselves, when we kind of resign ourselves to being imperfect or resign ourselves to our fate, feeling that it's impossible to get what we want, or impossible to be happy, or impossible to be perfect, so I might as well just act out all of my imperfection. I might as well accept my flawed nature and just act it out, act out my pain. To really accept ourselves can be a tremendous challenge. stopped because we don't know how to do it. And we don't know what it would mean to give room to the imperfect. Or we think we need to be saved from ourselves, saved from our craziness, saved from our impulses, saved from our tendencies to judge. And it's so hard for us to understand. That to be with the wholeness of reality, to be with the heart of God, the heart of reality, means that we must begin by being who we are, where we are, when we are. It means being willing to be afraid if we're afraid. Happy if we're happy. Sad if we're sad. And it is only in beginning to give space to our small difficulties, give room to the places in us that long for something more, but also long to accept ourselves, that we can begin the journey of returning to ourselves, returning to the arms of reality. It's hard for us to recognize that the ego personality doesn't need to be eliminated, but it needs healing. And the true healing of our personal egoic self doesn't come from rejecting ourselves, doesn't come from rejecting our struggles or challenges, or just in pushing ourselves, demanding ourselves to be better. Nor does it happen by simply gaining knowledge or wisdom alone, or having an experience in which we feel freer or happier, or for the moment we can lay down our judgments. It's actually a day-to-day, moment-to-moment, wrestling with what it means to be a human being, to be an imperfect human being who has confusion, who wants to love and be loved, who wants to be happy, and who may not know how to do it. It's hard for us to admit sometimes that all of these things that we've tried to be happy, to find happiness in jobs or relationships or activities, only makes us happy sometimes, temporarily, passes away. It's hard for us to even imagine that there is a kind of happiness or joy, better word for it, that includes our sorrows, a joy that includes the challenges of being a human being. It's hard for us to imagine that that's even possible. we're so used to putting one half of reality against the other, opposing our happiness as opposed to our sorrow, our joy as opposed to our anger, our love as opposed to our hate. It's hard for us to imagine what it would be like to have a life in which these things aren't in opposition to each other. Doesn't mean they're not different, but they're not in opposition. And what it would be like to live a life of unity in which your inner life isn't divided against the outer life, in which you don't have to hide from the world. Nor do you have to keep the world out. It's hard for us to imagine a life in which our joys and our sorrows are included in all of life. And we feel the deep relationship and kinship with all of life. Not as a momentary experience that we might have in meditation, or a momentary experience we might have in some kind of deep spiritual practice, but as a lived experience in which we actually feel on a daily basis the true beneficence of reality, in which we actually feel a relationship between our inner life and our outer life, in which we feel this sense of unity between the movements of our lives and the movements of our relationships. It's sometimes hard to imagine when we're in places of contraction and in the places of judgment and trying to cut away and cut off certain things that we feel or certain things that are difficult or challenge to us. We can get lost in self-improving, lost in constantly trying to change things to make the world over in our image of how things should be, should look. It's hard for us to imagine that to be with reality, to be at home in ourselves, requires only a willingness, and it's a challenge every day, to open our hearts and receive the mysteries of our daily lives, to open our hearts and our minds and our bodies, to open ourselves to our own tiny little trembling hearts, to realize that the beginning and, you know, it's kind of the alpha and omega, because it's the ongoing practice of extending a hand of friendship to yourself, extending a hand of friendship to the challenges of being who you are, where you are right now, to give yourself a chance to really recognize that you're doing the best that you can do. The best that you can do changes in every moment. Some moments we can be kinder and wiser than we can be in other moments. But to not demand that we be kinder or wiser or smarter than we are in any particular moment. I'd like to lead you through a little exercise, and then I'll open it up. I'd like you to pick one small difficulty of your life, some aspect of yourself you're having difficulty being with, or one small challenge in your life or in your relationship with another person. Now allow this small difficulty to exist. Hold it gently. With the understanding that something inside this difficulty is precious. Don't demand or insist that reality show you the ultimate meaning of this difficulty. But simply open to the possibility that this difficulty has something precious within it. Take a leap. Allow yourself to imagine that this difficulty has something precious in it. I'm going to open it up. For sharing, I'm going to ask that you just unmute yourself, and rather than unmute the whole group, since it'll be noisier that way. If you have a thought, something you'd like to say or share into the space, or question, push *6.
I have a question.
Okay. Your name?
Narda.
Hi.
Hi. If someone is being mean or abusive to you, how can you find something precious in that?
Well, I'm not suggesting that you find, how can I put this? If someone's being mean or abusive to you, I'm suggesting that you find something, first of all, I mean, abusive, these are the different things. I'm not sure what abusive means. There's some questions we can have.
Oh, let's say
that.
Verbally abusive.
Okay. So the preciousness of this may be that in this you have an opportunity to affirm your own right to exist. You're being given an opportunity to value yourself enough to say, it's not okay. That may be the preciousness of it.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that it's okay for someone to be abusive to you. Doesn't mean that it's okay for someone to be verbally abusive. What it means is that everything that happens in our lives has something in it that is an opportunity for us to heal and to grow and to learn to value the beauty and preciousness of life. And it is an opportunity for you to affirm that for yourself and stop it in whatever ways you need to stop it. But it is about you knowing that you're precious.
Okay, so it's the preciousness of myself, not of the other person.
You have to begin with you.
Mm-hmm.
We get confused sometimes. We try to start with other people. But you have to begin with you. If you're not valuing you, then valuing another person usually has in it an attempt to, if I'm good to them, then they'll be good to me. It usually is a bargain we make, some kind of bargain or adjustment that we make. If we take the bargain out of it and we recognize that it must begin with us and we bring that energy back into us, then, yes, it is about valuing your preciousness, your life. There's only you. There's only one of you in this world, and it is about valuing you.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello, Brenda.
Yes.
This is Susan Volan.
Uh-huh. Hi, Susan.
Hi. And you use the word God,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that means.
Okay. From a non-dual perspective, we use these words interchangeably. God, reality, oneness, all that is, the real self. These are words that we use interchangeably. It is, from the non-dual perspective, we really look at both the, it brings together both the theistic and the non-theistic, in terms of the ways of looking at it, in which we both see reality as including the relative personal world, and what's called the absolute or the emptiness, and that they fundamentally are one thing. So when we talk about God, that's what we mean. We mean that it's all fundamentally one. It's the unitive state. It's about the fact that, the heart of all religions and at the mystical core speaks to the oneness of reality. And this shows up in, all theistic paths, and it shows up in terms of when it gets to other paths like Buddhism, it talks about it from the standpoint of emptiness, or the fundamental nature of reality as being emptiness. What we work with has to do with the understanding of the fact that reality is so one that it includes separateness, it includes duality. But that's what we mean by when we talk about God.
And again, you said the absolute.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry. You said the absolute.
Yes.
Can you refer to that again?
I'm not sure what I. Okay, I'm not sure what I said. But so, from the standpoint of, there's often these divisions that are made between the relative world, the world of the personal, and what's seen as another level of reality that's referred to as the fundamental nature of reality being emptiness or nothingness, no thingness. It doesn't include. And from our perspective, true unity includes emptiness and fullness, if you will, or separateness and emptiness. So the absolute and the relative are fundamentally two faces of a single thing, which is oneness or reality or God.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Fundamentally, Susan, I'll say this. What we're engaged in, this work, is engaged in the healing of the human being. People come to this program from many different religious backgrounds as well as no religious backgrounds. But people come into this program who are Christians, who are Jews, who are Muslim, who are Buddhist. People come to this school, to this work, from many different paths. And what is held in common by people who engage with this work is a desire to heal, the human personality, and to be able to be a healing presence in the world in whatever way that takes them. It doesn't mean people change their religion. You know, people come in, if they come in Christian, they stay Christian. If they come in Jewish, they stay Jewish. But what happens is that people, we look for the fundamental core of all of these, in which we are interested in honoring the human being and the human path, and that there is a reason that reality keeps creating human beings, and that human beings have a purpose and a meaning, if you will, in the world, and that that purpose isn't just to transcend or get rid of what it means to be a human being, that trying to transcend the human life before we've ever actually embraced the human life is problematic, because there are many paths of transcendence out there that are interested in purifying the ego and in transcending the ego. The struggle with that is that we wind up splitting ourselves, and we don't. And it's a very subtle split, but it still winds up splitting us, in that we say that there is a place where wholeness or holiness can be found, and there's a place where it isn't. And the place where it isn't winds up being our human life, our ego personality. And if we continue down that path of simply trying to eliminate all that it means to be a human being, then we're missing the point of what it means to be a human being. We're missing the beauty of a human being, the beauty of a human life. And a lot of our difficulties in the world seem to be because we don't embrace our humanity enough. It isn't because we've embraced our humanity. It's because we haven't embraced it. It's because we have our humanity as opposed to someone else's humanity, our humanity as opposed to the needs of the earth, or our humanity as opposed to the needs of other beings that live on the earth. That's not the same thing as truly embracing our humanity. To truly embrace our humanity automatically leads to compassion for all of life, automatically leads to compassion for other human beings who are different from us, automatically leads to compassion for all beings upon the earth. But a lot of what we do depends on us first coming back to and loving this tiny little human life that we have, and valuing this tiny little human life that we have. And a lot of the acting out and difficulties that are going on in the world are because we don't. We want the world to either be some kind of homogenous kind of thing where everyone agrees with everything, which is not true oneness. That's kind of a fuzzy kind of version of oneness. We want to be able to, what we're interested in is healing the human being so that the human being can be a healing force in the world, one who embraces who they are and can embrace, as I said, difference, the fact that the world is filled with exquisite difference, and that there's a reason for that. So that's what this work is about. Does that help, Susan?
Yes, that was wonderful. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Thoughts? Sharings? No other questions at this point? You know, this, what I'm bringing to you today, and I'm going to do some more work with you in a few minutes, you know, I love human beings. I'm going to be clear. I love human beings. I love life. I love life in all the different forms and ways that it appears. The sorrow that I feel when I feel the pain of the world and the pain, my own pain, when I feel separate and cut off from myself, and the sorrow and pain I feel in the world when I feel the separateness and the ways that we judge and even condemn ourselves, it's painful. And it is the response to it always has to begin, as I said, with ourselves, with being willing to feel what we feel, to being willing to be happy when we're happy, to be willing to be confused when we're confused, to be willing to wrestle with reality, and find out that there's more going on than what we think. One of the struggles of life is that life is such a mystery, and we have certain kinds of relationships to the mystery of life. We can try to keep ourselves just in the known only, the familiar tracks only, in order to avoid the mystery, because the mystery feels dangerous to us. Or we can have another response to it can be we just try to go towards the mystery because we think that must be where the good stuff is the mystery of life. It must be in the good, that must be the good stuff because the familiar feels too painful. And it's hard for us to imagine sometimes of what it's like to be able to embrace both the known and the unknown, the familiar and the mystery of life. And what life looks like when those come together in a unitive way. The work of non-dual Kabbalistic healing, we do a lot of work with opposites, a lot of work with bringing together the opposites of life, like the known and the unknown. The working with the opposites of life, we have a chance to find out the true unitive nature of these, of when they come together, of what it's like to have opposites that aren't just in opposition, but are also allowed to be opposites, to be different. As I said, one of our responses to the pain of the world is we often try to wipe out difference, to wipe out the opposites, so that we can feel some kind of temporary peace where we want clarity as opposed to confusion. We want to wipe out confusion so we just feel clear. But confusion has a place in our life, and we don't get to find out its proper place if we don't allow it to exist. So this work is fundamentally about healing. About healing and awakening to ourselves in a new way, to finding out the true preciousness of a human life, not just precious in the sense of, you know, just looking at something that's beautiful or looking at something that's small and little and going, oh, that's so precious, but to be actually, as I said, able to live it and to live it in a very real way. I often call this path as a path of love with bones, meaning that it isn't mushy. It is love that has a fierceness to it, a fullness to it, a gentleness to it, kindness to it, compassion to it, has many different qualities to it, but it's a love that embraces and includes more and more of life. That every way we would turn in which we're going, okay, that's enough, I can include that much of life, but now I'm going to stop, it encourages us to include even more, to take the next step of embracing ourselves and embracing life. So, when we have an open-hearted attitude towards ourselves, we work with everything that comes. From insight to resistance, from boredom to enthusiasm, from tears to laughter. We are then in the arms of reality. Reality which accepts all things, is all things, and moves all things towards completion. The final insight of all paths, from Buddhism to Christianity, Islam to Judaism, to any path, is to be tender-hearted. Having an open heart, being tender-hearted, does not mean being happy as opposed to sad in every moment, nor does it even mean being spiritual. It means having an open attitude towards ourselves and our limitations and our imperfections. It means being willing to give yourself a chance through accepting all of who you are. It must begin with you, with kindness, instead of constantly battling with yourself, constantly beating yourself up or demanding that you be different. This open heart includes everything, even separateness. As human beings with a physical body that is born and dies, we perceive reality in a certain way. Our eyes only see part of the spectrum. Our bodies and senses only pick up certain aspects of reality. We all have imperfect parents, psychic and emotional wounding we try to bury or escape. Therefore, we pull out of reality, the plenum, if you will, what we can relate to, what we believe ourselves to be. One of the effects of this is we wind up filtering reality into pieces manageable enough to call a human life. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the human way to be able to filter. However, this very ability to filter reality into pieces and parts is also the ground of our suffering as well. In other words, we suffer because we do not see the whole picture, because we do not recognize our relationship to the whole. We don't recognize our value to all of reality. We see ourselves in these small and limited ways only, or we try to make ourselves bigger than we are, which is also just another form of filtering. So we wind up spending a lot of time protecting ourselves or defending against the aspects of reality we cannot allow in. We end up rejecting aspects of ourselves, rejecting aspects of reality, rejecting continually. And we end up believing that this is how life works, that this is what's true and real. However, the great blessing is that healing is already built into reality. Even within our defenses, healing is possible in this place. We can heal because we also have the ability to change our awareness. to recognize how we limit reality through our personal histories, through our imperfections. We can recognize and wake up to the ways we reduce reality into pieces and manageable parts. We can become willing to see that we are the ones who are limiting reality. We are creating suffering for ourselves. We do this not because we're bad or just crazy. We do it because we haven't known any other way. It means being willing, as I've said, to extend the hand of friendship towards this imperfect, uncertain, unpredictable human life. Having an open heart is an attitude and an action. It means inviting everything in. It means having an open attitude to even the part of you that's closed, the part of you that doesn't want to allow life to be here as it is right now, the part of you that wants to continue to do things the way you've always done them, to protect yourself in the way you've always protected yourself, by defending, cutting off aspects of life. Human beings are so amazing, I think. I'm so in awe, continually, truly, of human beings that we can suffer such confusions and heartaches and real abuse and tragedies as little ones and in our adult lives, and yet there's always one in us who seems to have hope for something better, hope for healing, even though we don't know how to do it. I'm amazed that human beings find ways to manage through the confusion of life. No one hands us a manual and says, this is how life works, you know, and we have to try to figure it out. And we do. We cobble together different things, and we come up with a view of life, and we start and we move through life. And usually, at some point in our life, something else happens. It can be something not going our way, you know, losing a job we love, losing a relationship we love, the death. It doesn't have to be big things. It can be small things. But we find that the way our life has been going doesn't work anymore. And we begin to question some of the structures we've set up for ourselves, some of the ways we've set up life, the ways that we thought life worked. And we begin to question them. And we begin to wonder, is this really all there is? Is there more to it than that? And it's that questioning, it's that ability to question that is such an important part of healing. It's such an important part of what's built in to life, that we have that ability to question, that we have the ability to wonder, is this all there is? Is there another way to do this? Is there another way to live my life? Is there another way for me to be happy? What would it mean to be happy? Is there a way to live my life that is in relationship to other human beings, that feels whole and real and fulfilling and compassionate and kind? What does it mean to be kind? We develop ideas of what it means to be kind early on, ways that we need to defend and protect ourselves. And then we begin to question, is that truly what kindness looks like? Or does it look like something else? And it's that questioning that actually leads us into usually a much, how can I put it? It leads us into the deeper heart of reality, because that questioning engages us with ourselves, who we are, who we thought we were, what we thought was possible, and it engages us with all of life. It engages us with the potentials and possibilities that exist in the world that may not be what we thought they were. It's an extraordinary thing to begin to question. We often have difficulty with that because it leads us into confusion. and if we value clarity over confusion, then we're going to struggle with into that confusion. But that confusion is so important because it means the way we divided the world into black and white now has other shades and other possibilities for us. So it's an important moment. And I know for me that was the moment that brought me into this particular work 18 years ago, because it was an important thing for me to begin to question what was possible. I personally always had a connection to so-called other realms, other levels of reality, and could receive guidance and all those kinds of things. But it didn't help me to be happier with me. It didn't help me to love my life. It actually increased my feelings of being split, because I had the feelings of like, okay, these other realms are where the beauty and the love is. It certainly isn't in this physical human life. So I had to find another way. And that's what drew me into this, because the questing, the ways that I had tried to save my life, only worked to a certain extent. And I needed to find another way that would allow me to love my human life, my one precious little human life that I have right now, and that would allow me to truly help others to heal, because that was also a big thing that I wanted my whole life, was to help others to heal as well. And but like so many others, I would often think that was like rescuing or saving other people. So to learn how to do it in a way that wasn't about rescuing or saving, but was about truly loving kindness, that was true about true compassion and what true compassion would look like, it's a big thing. It's a big thing. So, you know, so I'd like to lead you through another little meditation. Just be with your breathing for a few minutes. Don't change it in any way, just notice it. Our intention in this meditation is to invite everything in, to invite everything in. All the parts of yourself, the small frightened ones, you, the one who's frightened to be in life, come in. You, the one who forgets to be kind to yourself, come in, be here now. You, the one who is selfish and greedy at times, come in, be here now. You, the one who remembers God from time to time, please come in. You, the one who's standing guard, who feels the need to defend, push away life from time to time, come in. Invite in all these different aspects of yourself. Simply recognize the different voices and invite them in. Inviting them in doesn't mean they automatically start talking to each other. Doesn't mean you come away with some immediate insight or revelation. Inviting them in does mean that you're beginning with acceptance and compassion. You're creating the ground for healing in whatever form it will take by inviting in, allowing to exist all these different aspects of yourself. It's like inviting them all to the peace table. Sometimes when they all come to the table, first things they have to say is to speak of their conflict. But it means inviting them in. Allowing them to be here. When you're ready, you can push *6 again if someone would like to share or ask a question. *6.
Oh, wait, I want to hear the question.
So, everyone's unmuted. I'd like to know if anyone has a question or a sharing. Hello?
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 Hi? Does anyone have anything they'd like to share or questions?
Well, I really enjoyed the comment. I guess I have to think about them.
Thank you. Good. I know it's hard sometimes in this kind of public format for public forum for people to feel free in sharing, but I would love to hear from anyone if you'd like to share anything or ask any other questions.
How many people were on this conference call?
I don't know.
Hello?
I have no idea.
Hello?
Hi.
This is Jack. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
Hey, that was wonderful.
Good.
The talk and all that leading up to this particular exercise. I found that those places of acceptance opened me up to compassion for even those who I had learned these ways of dealing or not dealing, or however the perspective is. And how much compassion I had for them, and of course their struggle to change something which I had never even perceived as a learned behavior. It was more like, that's just a struggle, so you know, it had a particular set of beliefs around it, and it was really wonderful to just
drive
go
it.
Ah,
you can't drive the truck?
No, I do not feel comfortable driving.
And have that compassion. So,
somebody there, unmute on, and they have people in the room that are having conversations.
Believe it or not, that's after my game.
I don't understand.
You couldn't find a...
No.
I'm not mad at you.
I know, but you're like, you couldn't like...
Oh,
no. That was the only table there.
Okay.
So I muted it again just because it was getting a little noisy. I'm not quite sure what was happening in the background. But I really appreciated your comments. Those are you can unmute yourself back again if you want, star six, Jack. But I really appreciate your comments.
I really appreciate especially the comments about the value of confusion over clarity. I guess I hadn't thought about that.
Yes, we as human beings, we do tend to value clarity more, and certainly we want clarity, but there is value to confusion too. Confusion usually means that we're being presented with something. If it's not a defense, sometimes confusion is a defense too. But if it's not a defense, then confusion usually means we're being presented with something that's actually larger. Larger or than we can take in or digest or metabolize at the moment, and so we have to work with that confusion because there's something else that's going on that is offering us another opportunity to heal.
Cool, interesting.
So
we just need to wait.
Well. sometimes we need to wait. Sometimes we need to wrestle with it. Sometimes we need to. There are different responses to it. But it does have to do with first being willing to accept it and allow it to exist. And then we can also learn what a healing response to it is. But the first healing response has to be it's allowed to exist.
That's interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have a question. My name is Anya.
Hi, Bonnie.
Anya.
Tanya. Is that right? You said?
Okay.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've been in this process you're talking about. It's lovely to hear the language that you give it. I've been in this process for several years, and I wonder if you would please speak about in the process of inviting these parts in and accepting them, I seem to get sort of bogged down frequently in trying to understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
You know, on the one hand, the understanding why can be helpful. It can also be a hindrance. And it can be a hindrance in that we try to understand why, because we think then if we understand why, we're actually going to be able to allow it to exist, or we're actually then going to be able to move with it, or we're actually going to be able to do something with it. Or, you know, we have these motivations behind wanting to understand why. And what's interesting is that sometimes we just won't understand why. And sometimes, you know, the why comes many years later. You know, we have these, you know, we'll look back at our life and we'll realize, oh, that had a place, you know, 5 years ago. I can get why that happened. I can see why it unfolded and how it did its thing. So we have that hindsight kind of thing. But in the moment, it's hard for us to, like, let it live and to have that question. You can have the question of why, but to let the question live without having an immediate answer. And that's where we get bogged down, because we want to ask the question and we want the answer immediately, or we want to ask the question and we want to keep asking it and keep asking it and keep asking it, expecting to get the answer by keep asking it. And sometimes the questions themselves are the answer. The question of why can be the question that takes you into someplace else where you, other than you thought it would take you to. It won't answer the why the circumstances is happening, but it may take you into something deeper about your life and the potentials of your life and what can happen. So the questions don't always take us to where we think they're going to take us. And that's part of the where we can, again, get bogged down or hung up, because we want, again, the question and the answer to come in a particular kind of way. And reality is much more interesting than that. That's difficult for us as human beings. But reality actually works in a very interesting way, in which questions themselves have an impulse and a flow behind them and a motivation within them that have a different level of healing in them and where they're taking us beyond what we on a personal level can necessarily know in the moment or understand. And we don't actually get to discover the relationship of the personal to the impersonal or the personal to the transcendent nature of reality or these other realms unless we're willing to be carried somewhere. And the question, sometimes we want the question to be, again, we want to be in charge and we want to be in control and we want it to come a certain kind of way. And actually the question is meant to take us someplace else than we could have planned, predicted, or controlled. that it's taking us into reality in a different way. And reality wants our healing in a way that's hard for us to imagine. So, I don't know, that's a big answer to your big question, but does that help at all?
That's perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I have a question.
Yes, of course.
All of this obviously is about healing, non-dualistic, Kabbalistic healing.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear all the talk about healing, there's a part of me that is like, well, that sounds like there's something wrong with me that needs to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing there's also an aspect of this where there's a belief that we're whole and complete as we are as well and everything is perfect.
Right.
And so I was wondering if you could speak to that as well, because I guess that's part of the duality in which we're whole and complete and perfect as we are, and there's all these opportunities for healing at the same time.
Yes, that actually is the creative edge that we work with continually in this work. It's the, we call it the where, you know, again, you're completely okay the way you are, and we all need a lot of work. is one way we call it. But what you just said is exactly what we work with, that edge. It's the, because that's the edge of unity. It's the edge in which life as it is, who we are, is completely whole, and that's true. And we also all need a lot of work. We all need a lot of healing. Both are true. And what is it like to live in that creative place where those two things are held very close together, and where they are completely inform each other. They're not in opposition to each other. They are one thing. And what does it mean to live your life in that way, in which there is that ground in which we really know and can work with, and we begin with not knowing that because people have doubts about that being true, but that's the ground that we're continually working with, in which everything is exactly as it needs to be, is exactly whole, and we all need a lot of work because there's also the work, continual work of awakening and healing, and it's built into life. And what is healing from that perspective, when both things are true, when wholeness includes imperfection, what does it look like? What is the healing then? What happens? How does healing happen on those levels? How does our body change, our heart change, our mind change, our spirit change? What does it mean to heal throughout all of reality? When we really work with that creative edge where those two things are completely true.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions and sharings people have?
Brenda, this is Susan again.
Could you speak up? I'm sorry, I could barely hear you.
Yeah, sorry. This is Susan again, and I was wondering if you were willing at this point to talk a little bit about the trainings that are offered through the Society of Souls?
Sure, sure. Okay. So the Society of Souls has the main program that we have is a 4-year training program. And it's a 4-year training program that is a training on non-dual Kabbalistic healing. And it is in the United States. It takes place in Island, New Jersey right now. At least the current class is going to start in April. And we also have a class that starts in the Netherlands in the fall, if you're in another country. And the four-year program is really where we do the most in-depth work, where in year one we spend a lot of time working with questions, actually. And year one is all about learning to question. It's all about learning to look at the assumptions we've made about reality and how reality works that are often hidden to us because they've become so much about the way we move through the world that we take them as givens. We don't question them. This is the way the world works. So we spend, year one is all about the questions and all about the givens, the basic assumptions we have, the basic assumptions we have about the ways that we divide the world between our bodies and separate ourselves from other people. We call year one a lot of deconstruction from the standpoint that we begin to question, and we question everything. And year one is about that ground of question. Year two, we begin to work with, you do learn healing, actually, in year one as well. I mean, a specific healing that you can do. We do teach, you do learn a technique that includes there is in this exquisite diagnostic process and these healings. But whether people become healers or not, some people will become healers, and that's what they'll do. Other people will take what they learn in the 4 years and bring it into the field that they do, whether they're a teacher or a lawyer or a doctor or something else. But that's what year one is. Year two, we begin to work with the Kabbalistic schema from a non-dual perspective, which is different than other ways of working with the Kabbalah. And the main reason we work with the Kabbalah is because the Kabbalah is this incredibly exquisite schema that is all about the fundamental nature of relationship. It's all about relationship, and everything is in relationship. All opposites and their relationships, relationships of one thing to another, that part of the way that we actually exist as separate beings is the fact that we're in relationship to everything else. So it does this exquisite way of looking, working with relationship. And again, we work with it from a non-dual perspective. So we begin to go into that, and we learn healings, and we begin to work with opposites, very strong opposites in a very different way. And then year three, we go much deeper into the ground of the early life, and we begin to work with, all along this has been true, but in year three in particular, we go very deeply into what could be seen as psychological material, but we work with it, again, from a non-dual perspective, and we work with these ground historical assumptions that we have based on our childhoods and the wounds and slings and arrows of our childhood and begin to unwind very, very deeply from these. And at this point, we're learning two healings every weekend, and we're going through these healings, and they work with these, again, basic opposites, relationships, and the ground of you know, what it means to be a human being and fundamental assumptions that we have from our historical woundings, the way that we're still living our life, actually not in the present moment, but in memory, through the historical memories we have and through these wounds and filters, and how those are part of how we filter the world. And then in year four, we go... we now bring in more of the transcendent levels of reality or the impersonal levels of reality, and we begin to work with uniting the impersonal and the personal levels of reality and awakening to the fact that we're not just personal beings, that we also have more going on than that. So that's what we do in these 4 years. These 4 years is a complete, it's the bringing together of the personal self and the transcendent nature of reality, and that's what we're doing. That's the most extensive program that we do. It's dramatically transformative for people, and that's what we do. We also offer other programs that are of less length, We have something called Work of Return, which is a healing. It's a personal healing that can be taught in 2 days or 1 day. Actually, I guess it can be taught, and where it works with symptoms. Basically, it particularly is helpful for people who have a lot of chronic kinds of things, but it works with symptoms or ways of helping to return heal the particular symptoms that people have, and they can do it as a self-healing modality. We also have another training that we do, it's something called the Magi process, which basically is a process of working with conflict, or which includes conflicts that we have around our desires and things we wish to manifest in the world or bring into the world. So that can be taught. I've taught it in as little as a half a day. It's better to be taught in a series of four. So we usually teach it in a series of four, several hours when we teach that. And then we have impersonal movement, which is a process that's about a movement, an awakening process. It's a meditative process. That's actually included in year four, but people can take it separately from the non-dual Kabbalistic healing. And then we have many different things that we offer, like, you know, these teleclasses that we do, and other one-day workshops and other kinds of things that we do where we just bring the work out. So I think that answers it. But Susan, feel free to ask me a question I haven't answered, because I may not have answered everything you had.
No, that's exactly what I wanted to understand, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The year four bring in the impersonal, or that's like the transcendent.
Correct. Yes.
And unify that with the personal, the personal self and the transcendent.
Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what we do with year four. The thing is that the fundamental premise of that is that all of us, or most people, I should say all, but most people have had some kind of transcendent experience, a moment in which they felt that where they was looking at a sunset, or you've had a meditative experience or something else. Most people have had a transcendent experience. Not everyone, but most people. It creates, again, this subtle split, because we think that that then is what it should feel like. If we're going to be in the state of oneness, that's what it should feel like. But we have to heal the human personality. We can't just get rid of or transcend it, first of all, because there is a reason reality keeps making human personalities. Human beings are important in the picture of reality. And so we don't want to, you know, we're not trying to get rid of human beings. We want to love human beings. So the first 3 years are all about healing the human being, the human personality. And it's subtle, and it's also dramatic. You know, both things are true. Because we really, we don't know what it's like to really move through the world trusting ourselves, trusting our own movements, and trusting the world. So we have to start there. We have to go back to the ground of base assumptions about what it means to be a human being. And then from there, it is safe, so to speak, meaning that it is possible for us to fully then unite with the transcendent or the impersonal, which is part of who we are as well, but we're not doing it as an escape, not doing it as a way to get rid of or away from the difficulties of being a human being, but as a fundamental part of our birthright, a fundamental part of our of who we are as human beings, is this.
So that's what we do if we have a transcendent, or we can do if we have a transcendent experience.
It's what we can do, yes, yes.
We want to have it all the time, and we think that's what it should be, and it's an escape, so you find people who maybe are kind of psychic or very religious or something like that, but they don't seem to be connected with
they're not connected with
regular life.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. That's usually what happens because it, as I said, I mean, I can speak for myself personally. That was true for me personally. I had a real battle with it because I was also, I'm also very connected to the earth, always was, but I also had this battle where I could be connected to the earth where simultaneously I wanted to escape to these higher realms. And so that's why this work was so amazing for me personally, because I found a way to truly bring the two together. I was always trying to do that, but I didn't know how. And it's important that we do that, because to be transcendent only means we don't actually help the suffering of the world. We're actually subtly increasing the suffering for ourselves as well as others, because we are subtly making one thing better than the other. We're making the transcendent better, and we're making a human life worse.
And we're thinking of ourselves as better.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's an attempt at purity, and we're not pure beings. We're not meant to be pure beings. We're imperfect and amazing. Both
things.
<Okay. laughs>
Okay, we need to stay in the street. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I ask another one? The work of the return taught in one day, can that be done online?
No, we cannot teach work of return online. It's a practice that includes physical movement, gentle physical movement, but it does include some physical movement, and you have to be taught how to do the step. You have to watch someone do it. I mean, and you have to actually. I don't even know that it could be taught. You know, we haven't explored teaching it via video, but I think it would be very difficult because we have to watch people do it and also help them in their movement and help them in what they're doing with it. So I think it'd be very difficult for us to do that. So,
what about the Magi process?
Magi process can be taught that way. I have taught it that way, and may offer some in the next year to do that. I'm still busy trying to figure out some of the other things I want to offer this year. So yes, Magi process. If you're on our mailing list, and if you're not, I can add you to our mailing list. I said because you had to register for this. So. You know, at some point, yes, I may do that. We may do that. I mean, if I don't do it, someone else might do it, but I probably will do it sometime in the next year.
Well, I registered for your first year, so I guess I'm on your mailing.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question about, I'm very interested in taking the non-dual Kabbalistic healing training, but I'm not sure that this year is the right time to start.
Okay.
And so next year might be a better time to start.
Okay.
Would it make sense to maybe do a work of return workshop, or is that, I'm not sure. Is there...
No, I mean, I hear
a way
the question.
To talk to someone. Go ahead.
Yes, there's a way for you to be. I don't know about whether or not. Where are you located? Where do you live?
I'm in the Midwest.
You're in the Midwest. Colorado or somewhere?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay. So I was trying to think whether or not we would be teaching a work of return workshop in your area. That's all I was trying to figure out. I don't know that we're going to be doing a work of return workshop in Wisconsin. I know she'll probably be doing, the main person who goes and teaches this is Eileen Marta Merman. There are other people who teach it too, but Eileen's the main one. And I know she'll probably be doing it in some other places this year. As long as you're on our mailing list, we can let you know about other things that we're teaching. You know, if I have your name and address, email, which I have to have for you to register for today. You'll get notices of things that we're doing throughout the year. So there are other opportunities. So there will be other opportunities, whether it's the Magi process, work of return, other kinds of things that you can indeed participate in this year. So, I'm not sure I answered the question. Did I answer the question?
I'm not sure either.
Okay. Well, there are other things you certainly can participate in this year. As you said, you feel like you'd like to take the non-dual Kabbalistic healing. This doesn't feel like your year. There are certainly other things you will be able to take. Work of return could be a good thing. It could be the Magi process could be a good thing for you to do this year. Some of the other teleclasses we'll be offering this year. So I would just encourage you to sign up for whatever feels right to you. I'm not going to say that there's a hierarchy in terms of should you do work of return over Magi or over one of these other things. It's more that we will give you these offerings throughout the year, and feel free to sign up for anything that feels right to you.
Yes, thank you. Is there any more complete schedule of where they're being offered or when?
We don't have a full on the Society of Souls website, as well as on my website, Brenda Carter Blessings, the one that you had to use to register. We have offerings of various things that we're doing, but we're adding more things all the time. So we don't have a full schedule of all the work of return things that are going to be offered this year, for example. That hasn't been put up yet. Hopefully it will be in the next couple of weeks. We are still adding other workshops and things. We're still putting them in place. So there are some up there now that are listed under events on both my website, as I said, and a Society of Souls website. And there will be more in the next month. So I would just encourage you to, again, keep checking, but we also send out e-blast of various things that we're doing.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Brenda. It's Susan again.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have two questions. What you were just saying raised a question for me. Can I ask why you have two websites, the Society of Souls website, and then your private website, which actually lists things from the Society of Souls? That was a little confusing to me.
Sure. I understand. The reason I do understand. The reason there are the websites is because we were in the middle of a year ago revamping a Society of Souls website. We needed to go through a process in which Jason and I and some others were working on that process, and I needed to, and I had a whole set of offerings that I was doing at the time. I didn't want to wait for that website to be complete, so I created my other website. So I have personally avoided having a personal website for at least 18 years, despite the fact that my best friend does website stuff. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and set my own personal, because people also were wanting to learn more about me. The people knew more about Jason, and they needed to know more about me. Because 2 years ago, I was named as Jason's, who's the founder of the school. I was named as his Dharma heir, and I was named as the next, and people wanted to know more about me than they knew. So that site didn't exist at that point. So I went ahead and created my personal website that included more about me and more about things that I was offering and things that I was doing at that point. And then, like I said, the Society of Souls website, we went ahead and we've updated that website. We haven't brought the two together yet because we're still in some transitional stuff in terms of the other teachers that we're training and what we're going to include about the others, and so we're still in this kind of transition. So it's probably going to still exist this way for another year, and then at some point they probably will just be one. But that's the reason why. It's transition time.
and that leads to my next question, which is, what is Jason's involvement at all anymore with the Society of Souls?
Jason is still very involved in the Society of Souls. He primarily teaches at this point at the graduate level, meaning when someone's graduated from the four-year training, he's primarily doing advanced work with graduates. That's what he does mostly. He will make appearances in the four-year training, whether he'll come in for some kind of evening lecture or an evening Q&A, or he'll come in and he'll do video or a Skype thing. So he'll make appearances. He'll be engaged in that way. But he's no longer teaching the 4-year training as the solo teacher. You know, as the main teacher, not the solo
Understood.
Teacher, because he hasn't been solo teacher for many years. But he's no longer teaching that as his main thing. He's mostly working with advanced graduates at this point.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is John.
Hi.
Spoke a few moments ago. I was wondering. You were talking about classes. Is there something coming up on March 20th? Possibly. Something. I actually heard this from several friends, and I was wondering if there's something about perceiving reality or something.
I'm not aware of anything on March 20th. The date doesn't sound familiar to me.
Okay.
So, no, I'm not aware of anything on March 20th.
Okay. All right, maybe it was a video class. I'm not sure, but anyway, I thought I would ask since.
Oh no, I appreciate you asking. I mean, there are different videos that we put up on the website from time to time of things that Jason does. He hasn't made any kind of announcement about March 20th. So I mean, it's possible you know something I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but unlikely, but it's possible.
Thank you for that. Okay, well, thank you. I actually have to go off and go to work, but I just really wanted to just thank you.
You're welcome. You're very
for this
welcome.
Work, and thank you for delivering.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Okay.
See you.
All right. So we have time for another one. You know, if someone has another question, I mean, otherwise we can end. So, but I just want to see if anyone else has a question.
Hi, Brenda. Okay. This is Nancy.
Well, I'm sorry, yes?
Hi, it's Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you and just to say how beautifully you articulate the power of this work and the power of this way of living, and I just really appreciate it, so thanks.
Thanks, Nancy.
How do we mute again?
I'm sorry, what, mute again, star 6. Okay. Well, thank you all for coming. It's been a delight to be with you. And,
Brenda?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Hi, it's Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
Ostrowski. Hi.
Hi.
I've been in on this. It was great. It was great to hear you again.
Okay. Good. Thank you, sweetie.
Thank you.
Okay. So
hi, Brenda.
Oh,
Brenda.
Yes.
I just wanted to thank you also.
You're welcome.
And it was very enlightening. And thank you for your help today.
You're welcome.
And I look forward to doing work with you in the future.
Good. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I'll unmute the whole thing. Okay, so everyone's unmuted now. Thank you again all for coming. It was a delight to be with you today. And, may you continue
to
heal. Thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye.